You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram. Maybe you're listening later wherever you get your podcasts. And if so, you can get ad-free versions of this podcast and all of our podcasts at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Guys, how are you doing? How's your week? Pete, I hear there's some bad weather where you are. Are you okay?
Hanging in there, man. You know, you got to get all the cows in the barn and all that kind of stuff when the bad weather rolls in.
Oh, wow. You are full Amish now, or Mennonite. Is that what's happening?
Whichever one parties, you know what I mean?
They both party in different ways. I spent last night in Mount Joy, Pennsylvania. Sort of.
What, dude? Are you serious? That's the second time you've done that. You swung by, hadn't said shit. Afterwards, I find out that's bullshit.
Oh, how about an invite to your house? That's what I'm saying.
You can't come. Always invited. You have an open invitation. You can show up anytime.
It's like Batman being like, "Come by anytime." Where? Oh, I'll never tell. Oh, you can't come to my cave. What do I just? I don't have your phone pinged. I don't have a. I should chip you just so I know.
Pete, similarly, this morning for breakfast, I had some Philly cream cheese, and I didn't get an invite either. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Oh man, you went all the way to Philly for the cheese.
Mm-hmm. He loves to go
into
the source.
You got
to
get it fresh.
Yeah, there's a well that you just pull a tap, and cream cheese barfs out of it onto your bagel.
What? I lived in Philly. I didn't see any of that.
Oh, yeah. You got to go to the bad part of town.
Yeah. It's like there's a court of owls that runs it. You got to really know.
Court of cream owls. Cheese? I don't know. Yeah. Court of gritty? I don't know. We can.
Gritty.
Yeah. Come on, Alex saying everything he knows about Philadelphia. Cream cheese, gritty?
Bell? Hockey bell? I don't know. What?
Bell?
Rocky steps?
All right. Steps.
Yeah. I'll just keep shouting stuff about Philly throughout the show. But first, before we continue with this very fun bit about Philly facts, why don't we bring in one of our amazing guests here? We have two amazing guests this evening. First up, one of our favorite guys to talk to. He is behind the new Captain Planet Dynamite.
Nice.
Ladies and gentlemen, David Popoz. David, welcome.
Welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys so much for having me. It's so good to catch up with you, and I'm so excited to talk Captain Planet with you tonight.
We are excited to talk Captain Planet. You're a busy guy. You got a lot of different titles going on. But this is a big one, bringing back Captain Planet as part of Dynamite's overall, this is going to sound so corporate, but it's the Warner Brothers global consumer products thing that they're doing. But
surely there's a better name for that.
What?
That.
Cool Dudes Incorporated, I believe, is the other name of it. But you've been doing Space Ghost for them in this line. Also, so people know, there's also Thundercats and Silverhawks and Johnny Quest. Yeah. Captain Planet's the latest one. And you're giving it not a dark, gritty adult makeover, but a more modern makeover is maybe the better way to put it.
Nice. Absolutely. That's a great way to describe it. I'm a huge Captain Planet fan. I grew up as a kid in the 90s, so that was like part of my DNA.
He was there.
But for me, I think I've actually been pitching Captain Planet around the industry for close to 10 years. I've wanted to be the guy to do this relaunch for some time. And I think it's because Captain Planet often gets a bad rap for two reasons, I think. One is that it's so firmly a product of its time, and also that people say that its politics maybe aren't the most subtle. And I would say, to address that second point, you know, reality's gotten a lot less subtle. And I think it's, you know, and you see, like, you know, what we've done with, like, Space Ghost and what we're going to be doing with Speed Racer, I think it's easy, or not easy, I think it's very doable to kind of take those core elements of the original and figure out ways to modernize them and to use modern storytelling techniques to be able to tell a new story that's accessible for a new generation. And so for me, the thing that always really stood out about Captain Planet is I've always felt it has the building blocks to be a blockbuster success. You know, it's inherently diverse and multicultural with this international cast that is done in such an organic way that we haven't even really seen since the days of Giant Size X-Men. It's also very timely, you know, in terms of the environmental disasters that these characters are facing and also the human greed that fuels it. And I think lastly, pop culture and world history has really caught up to Captain Planet. You know, we're pitching this book as X-Men meets Avatar: The Last Airbender. And so we're able to inject really cool different strains of pop culture. It's like make the Planeteers have a lot of agency to make their powers really interesting and dynamic. And I think really like Captain Planet is just one of those properties, is one of those characters that everybody has overlooked for a really long time. But I think it was very forward thinking. I think it was ahead of its time. And now the world has kind of caught up. And so I feel like this is the kind of book with the kind of heroes that really represent today's moment.
Now, let me ask you, because there are four components to Captain Planet that make a lot of sense. There are four that make a lot of sense. Very straightforward. Yeah. Sort of can see a power set around them. Then there's a fifth one. There's a fifth one that I think is a little, always a little tricky. How are you approaching Heart?
Yes. Thank you for asking that. That was really, honestly, one of the big things that I thought a long time about in terms of Mati and the Power of Heart. For those who aren't familiar with Captain Planet, it's the story of five young people from around the world that are each given a ring that allows them to bend a certain element. So earth, fire, wind, water, and heart. And Mati, the character from South America, he was always kind of seen as maybe the punchline of the show, that he was this wide-eyed innocent with the Power of Heart. And what's the Power of Heart? And for me, I see it in a couple of ways. I mean, for me, I see that really as sort of, it's life, you know, that's sort of the fifth element that, you know, you have sort of the plant life and you've got fire and you've got wind and you got water, but then it's sort of what comes out of all that. That's sort of what heart means to me, but in a more practical sense, that means it's tactical telepathy. And that really kind of zooms in on our take on Mati in that, you know, we've done kind of like a smoldering brooding take on Mati. He's sort of the Shang-Chi, the Batman of our team, and that he grew up in Brazil as an indigenous person who his people were forced off their lands by corrupt mining interests. And he was ready to fight back, and I think in a particularly kind of brutal sort of way. And then he gets the Power of Heart, and it cleanses his mind of all rage and violence and turns him into this avowed pacifist who he doesn't throw a punch because he doesn't have to. The Power of Heart means that he can summon animals and they can help out. He can reach inside your mind and make you see things that aren't there. Mati has a lot of tricks up his sleeve. He really is kind of the X factor of our group. And he kind of weaves in and out a little bit like a shark in that, like, not the Planeteers aren't always really sure what to make of this guy. But he always kind of comes through in the clinch. And you'll definitely see, particularly in issue 3, he's got a really cool moment where he goes toe-to-toe with an eco-villain by himself. And so he's definitely become one of my favorite characters of the bunch. And the way that artist Damon Casalos has portrayed him, I don't know if the world is ready for cool Mati yet, but they're going to.
Well, let me ask you about the big thing that I think everybody is talking about online and certainly talking about here on the chat and YouTube is Captain Planet has a beard now, which we, all four of us, I think is very cool.
Respect. Mad respect.
But what led to that choice? Because it seems like a very specific choice.
You know, one of the things that, you know, we were talking about earlier is that the original Captain Planet is very much, it was meant to reflect the world outside its window, you know, but that was in the year 1990. And so the mullet and the crop top were very much, I think, a part of trying to capitalize on the trends of 1990. And I would argue that our approach for this is we are trying to take a more modern, but also maybe a little bit more of a timeless approach to the character. And so I felt like trying to do a redesign of Captain Planet felt like a way to sort of plant our flag design-wise. And Amon Casalos actually was the one that came up with the idea of the beard. I had sent Amon kind of a write-up of some thoughts for the character, you know, that I wanted to make it clear that his body was made out of the five elements, that he's not made out of flesh and blood like you and me, but he's made out of rocks and ice and flame and the heart logo. And Amon drew a couple different versions of it, and we all kind of, as soon as we saw the beard, we all were like, yeah, like it worked for Ultimate Peter Parker. It works for us. But I feel like it's one of those things that really kind of, I think not only is it a bold design choice that really says this is our version of Captain Planet, but I think it really reinforces not only this immortal demigod of the wilderness vibe that we have for Cap, but also, I think this kind of fatherly mentor approach, and that really is who he is to the rest of the Planeteers, is even if he doesn't really know these people, he still kind of instinctively knows us. And he's a character, I think, to address what you were talking about at the beginning of this, Alex, you know, we're not going for a grim and gritty approach. We're going for like a grounded approach. But at his core, Captain Planet is somebody who doesn't want to see anybody die. That's his like core mission. I pitched him as Superman with metamorphosed powers. And so there's this really kind of reassuring fatherly aura to him, and the way that he immediately dives in harm's way to protect the innocent. I think that's something that's really cool and something that is kind of the sort of figure we need right now. So, yeah, I think the beard, it really does have a lot of layers. But I will say, I remember seeing somebody on Twitter claiming that the beard was meant to be my self-insert. And let me tell you, the laugh that my wife let out when I read her that tweet, it's a huge compliment. But yeah, Captain Planet stands in a league of his own, and I can only hope to replicate it.
It's very funny that my crop top and mullet in 1990 is now, I also have a beard now. Captain Planet is my mirror in a lot of ways. So let me know what's changing about him.
And Pete is your heart, I believe, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Captain Planet and some other people get together and call me. I'm like the next hero.
I did want to ask you about another aspect that you touched on a little bit earlier, but obviously Captain Planet is still necessary today, is very relevant today. But how hard can you go? And I'm not asking you to throw your corporate overlords onto the bus or anything, but given that it is Warner Brothers Discovery, given it is Dynamite, like how hard are you planning on going on these environmental issues? How much can we expect from the book?
Sure. Well, you know, I have to say that Warner Brothers and Dynamite have been amazing creative partners on this. I think I've gotten one note. I'm writing issue 5 right now. And I can tell you that note was just, oh, hey, can you throw in some more flashbacks to Captain Planet in the beginning of issue 2? And so we get to see a really cool montage of like Captain Planet, like throughout the ages, seeing him like at the eruption of Pompeii, for example. You know, otherwise they've really given us like a lot of latitude to interpret the story as we see fit. And, you know, for me, it's about, first off, how do we represent the Planeteers in a way that feels modern and feels timely, and that each of these characters comes from a different place, a different angle of the greater environmental conversation. So for example, Kwame is a former soccer star who has suffered a career-ending injury, and so now he's working as a farmer, and he's trying to figure out kind of what his future, his new future might hold since his old dreams have died. Whereas Wheeler, we can recontextualize as an auto worker from Detroit, and so he's got a very different perspective on the whole environmental conversation because of the way that he thinks it's impacted his livelihood. Linka is my favorite character of the bunch. She was very forward-thinking in the original Captain Planet. She was from the Soviet Union. In 1990, But she was seen as like the more conservative Planeteer, and things have obviously changed quite a bit in the 35.
Yeah, you have a hotbed of politics you've just laid out here. So that's a lot on the table.
Yeah. So we've actually done a 180 with Linka. She's the most liberal and progressive of the Planeteer. She headlines her own underground eco-activist band in the vein of Pussy Riot. And so she's kind of our Ileana Rasputin. She's our Wolverine. She's the scrapper of the team. Gi, from South Korea, she's a marine biologist. In the original cartoon, that just meant she had a wetsuit and she dove around with dolphins. But
the Aquaman of the original team.
Yes, yeah. And for me, I think having written Savage Avengers and having a character like the Black Knight, I learned that having a scientist on your group, it's very useful for a storytelling tool. And so we really leaned into Gi as a marine biologist, as a scientist who like is really passionate and excited about her job. But that means that, you know, as the kid sister of the group, she's often underestimated. And, but she's the one who knows the stakes. She's the one that knows what it means when like the polar ice caps are melting at this rate and what it means for us in the future. So for her, hope is really a revolutionary act, because it's either that or you curl up into a ball of despair and just let the inevitable happen. And then, like I said, you know, with Mati, who, you know, he escaped these corrupt mining interests in his native Brazil. So each of these characters all have some sort of backstory that ties back to the greater environmental conversation. And we will be seeing bits and pieces of that continue throughout the whole series. But I think ultimately what I'm really excited about and what the original cartoon really didn't shy away from is it's human greed fueling all this. You know, it's the people who say, like, you know, as long as I get profit, as long as I get power, it doesn't matter what happens to the little guys in the ground. And I think for me, you know, climate change is no longer a hypothetical. It's a disaster movie that we're all living in. You know, I live in Los Angeles. We just had the wildfires. I was living in New York during Sandy. My parents live in Missouri. They had 15 tornadoes hit last month. You know, we're all living this. But there's these people that are fueling it saying, well, consequences don't mean anything to somebody like me. And so having our central villain, it's Lucian Plunder. And that's sort of our play on the original villain, Lucian Plunder. But this idea of this ruthless Elon Musk type billionaire who like doesn't care what happens as long as he gets what he wants. You know, when I wrote this outline for our opening story, it was the week before the election. And then we got the week after the election. And I will say it's been slightly concerning to see, like, you know, oh boy, like, you know, will I be able to kind of keep up with the headlines in terms of seeing, you know, these it's like, oh, Lucian Plunder just did like a Heil Hitler over at the inauguration today.
He's going to be, I think he's going to be a universally recognized villain soon. He's really diving in a way that is, he's comic book villain ready. So you're right on.
Yeah, you know, that's why I say like reality's gotten a lot less subtle. And so, I think this idea of like the Planeteers having to like stop environmental disaster. I mean, it really is half superhero book, half disaster movie. And sort of putting themselves in harm's way to save the innocent when somebody like Lucian Plunder kind of, you know, his ambitions get away from him. So, yeah, you know, I think for me, it's about how do we make this, you know, I understand that the environmental conversation maybe isn't always the sexiest in terms of like political conversations. So for me, it's how do we make this feel immediate? How do we make this feel personal? How do we make this, appeal to somebody's emotions with something like this? And I think even a character like Wheeler especially is so important, because his arc is all about why does this even matter? Why is the Planeteer's mission important? Why does this have to be me? Why can't we just turf this off to somebody else, or even just turf this off to a genie figure that we can just summon to, you know, wish away all our problems? And that's a message that we're going to be digging into in this, is why is this important? Why does it have to be people like you and me on the ground? Why does it have to be collective action? And why does it, you know, why does empathy with people from other walks of life, why is it still important? And I think it's because we're stronger together than we are apart. And I think that's really the core message that appealed to me so much about Captain Planet, and something that I consider myself very grateful to be able to tell that kind of story.
I mean, it sounds like you're talking about this anyway, but, you know, back in the 80s, this sort of message-driven thing, you'd grind the action to a halt to be like, just so you know about climate change, let me explain this. How do you find that balance then in terms of the writing, making sure that you are getting that message going while it is still an entertaining comic at the same time?
Well, I think for me, I'm very action oriented in terms of my work. And so for me, it's always about, you know, it's just pacing it out. It's like, okay, what's the action here? And then where are the quiet moments that you can have the character development and the emotional beats, and then talk about kind of what the stakes are. But I think the big difference between our Captain Planet and the classic Captain Planet is in 1990, all of this still felt hypothetical. And whereas like now it's not hypothetical, we're seeing it in the headlines all the time. And so I think that actually gave me a little bit of license to without spoiling too much, like show, like, we're going to see what happens when climate change goes amok. And sort of, you know, it's not always like a cut and dry sort of thing. It, you know, it becomes sort of a rescue mission. It's how do we save as many people as we can during all this? And so, I think people will see like, oh, this is the stakes. This is what we're trying to fight against. And I think that might sell the message just as much as sort of a PSA. So that's sort of the approach is, I think a lot of people, I assume that a lot of readers maybe aren't as well-versed in this sort of thing. And so trying to kind of give them as much information, but doing it in a character-driven way, I think that's my way of circling the square of making this mission feel important and feel resonant emotionally to our readers.
How do you reconcile, I just wanted to ask, how do you reconcile the idea that you're writing Captain Planet, a comic book, which is printed on paper, which is made from trees?
Oh, wow. Jeez.
It is recycled.
He's the paper. Enemy.
70% recycled. You know, beyond that, I just try to write my best so it doesn't turn into a waste of trees.
Wow. That's good. Is the, like I like what you're talking about, where, like, you're getting the message out there alongside, but what is then their ultimate mission statement? Captain Planet, you said, is saving as many lives as possible, but wouldn't that mean in the sort of ultimate form, like, changing the world in a perhaps a more aggressive way?
Yeah, is he going to do, like, a Thanos snap type thing, so that way immediately?
So, I don't want to go too deep into that, because depending on how long this run goes, that is a question that I would love to address. It's not right. You know, right now we're on the tail end of our opening arc, and we're going to kind of see what, like, the response is to that, and figuring out like what my bandwidth is in terms of stories beyond that. But it's a great question. And I think, you know, it's one that I think a lot of people have talked about, I think a little tongue in cheek, you know, since we announced the books, they're like, well, he doesn't look like Don Cheadle. And I know that the Funnier Die sketches, but I will say that with respect that I've watched those, and that's a level of nihilism that, like, I'm not even super comfortable with. And I wrote that block. You know, like, there's something like deeply unhinged about the Don Cheadle Captain Planet, and you could go into a whole like treatise about like why that sort of level of dark and gritty appeals to a certain subsection. But I think for me, you know, I never want to disrespect the core property. For me, it's really like pop culture archaeology. You know, the bones are there. The bones are just as strong as they ever were. And so whether it's Space Ghost or Speed Racer or Captain Planet, for me, it's just, how do we kind of identify those core pillars and then kind of give them just a little bit of a modern polish? It doesn't take much to make them sparkle like new. But I think the question that you asked about, like, well, you know, what happens when sort of this defensive posture isn't enough? I would love to address that question down the road. And I know exactly how I would do it. Pre-order the book and stay tuned, and maybe we can get it.
So you're saying, well, you have a easy fix for climate change, but people should buy the first arc and then you'll tell us what it is.
You know, I think it is really kind of like, it's a tricky thing, but I do think that that's the escapism of something like Captain Planet, is that, like, in the real world, like, we're not going to be able to punch out a billionaire. You know, you're not going to be able to fight a CEO. Well, I mean, listen, if somebody wants to take one for the team, feel free. But I think being able to take that kind of direct action against corruption, you know, I think that's the heart of the appeal of superheroes, dating all the way back to the first issue of Superman.
Yeah.
So that is definitely something that I'm excited to be tackling, and getting to see the other villains that sort of spin off of Lucian Plunder, you know, because when you have that kind of wealth, you are able to exercise other kinds of means. And so you'll be seeing characters like Argos Bleak as sort of an Eric Prince Blackwater type. You'll be seeing Dr. Blight and her AI assistant, Maul. You'll get to see Duke Nukem. Amon Casales did a really cool redesign of him. And then we've got a couple of their villains we're kind of keeping in the back pocket, a little close to the vest that you'll see a little bit later. But yeah, you know, I think there is kind of, I think today, especially in the year 2025, being able to kind of confront corruption directly is certainly, I think, a fantasy that a lot of us might appreciate. And so getting to see the Planeteers, you know, their mission is very personal, and you'll get to learn what that is by like issue one, issue two. But without spoiling too much, they've each got a target on their backs. So this is a mission that's very immediate and very personal to them from the jump.
Well, I'm very excited to, you know, read and check out how you're going to save the planet, man. This is going to be great to hear that you're working on this and to know you're writing. This is a very exciting project, and I really can't wait to read it.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it. I you know, I've been pitching this book for so long that I kind of have to pinch myself, knowing like, oh no, I'm actually writing it. And like, it's just as fun. It's even more fun than I thought it was going to be. And I think a lot of that, I want to give him a shout out. That's Amon Casalos, you know, our artist on the book. You might not be familiar with him. I was not familiar with him before we started working together. He's worked on books like Pathfinder, over at Dynamite. But he really is, he came to this book swinging. He's got a style that's like a little bit of Gary Frank and a little bit of Steve Dillon. But then you can see in some of the details a little Doug Monkey and a little bit of Frank Whiteley. He does this larger than life action really, really well. But that's not Amon's real strength. Amon's true strength is the character, the acting of it all. He does such cool stuff with the expressions and the body language. And so when you fall in love with the Planeteers, that's going to be Amon's fault. You know, he really goes a long way to making these, to elevating really everything I write in the script. And so he's one of the most talented artists I've ever had the good fortune to work with. And so, yeah, I can't wait for you to get to see these characters. The Planeteers, you know, the Planeteers aren't superheroes. You know, they don't have code names. They don't even have the matching outfits in the cartoon. Amon really designed them in a nice way that these are the people you could run into on the street. These are ordinary people just like you and me, but that their fashion each says something a little bit about their personalities. And then when you combine that with this heightened element of Captain Planet, it makes for a really cool story that feels like it could be the world outside your window, that feels immediate and accessible. And that was really the goal that we had for this book. So I can't wait for people to get to read it.
Real quick, I wanted to ask you about something else. Tomorrow, a new issue of Cable, Love, and Chrome is coming out.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil anything about it, but we've been loving this series. It's just this great balance of all-out Cable action and romance at the same time. There's some real heat between these characters. But I do want to ask you, again, skirting spoilers here, but how much is involved? How crazy have you gone trying to plot out a time travel plot for Cable? That seems crazy complicated.
It was crazy complicated. that was definitely, I don't know if it was as challenging as my Punisher miniseries, because that we had so many considerations to take into account for Joe, to make him still feel like a Punisher thing, but still feel a little different, but not reinvent the wheel too much and not overcomplicate it. But yeah, this was a lot of planning. I've been working on Cable. I actually just turned in my final lettering notes on the last issue this afternoon. So I've been working on that book since last February. And it took a lot of iterations to sort of figure out, okay, how's the time travel? Where's this all going to play out? And you haven't even seen, I know you've just read issue 4, You haven't even seen how that all plays out yet. But issue four, without spoiling too much, you know, this is very much our heaviest time travel issue. The idea of sort of like a recursive time loop, but also a rescue mission. And so that's my favorite issue of the run, I'd say. But issue five, we certainly we ramp up the time travel elements in an even bigger way. And so, I'm very excited for people to get to see it. We've been building up to a moment in issue four for a very long time. And so I'm excited for people to get to see it and hopefully not lose their minds too much.
Obviously, people should check out Captain Planet when it comes out on April 23rd and Cable Love and Chrome, which is coming out new issue tomorrow. What else should people be checking out from you, if anything?
Sure. Well, my ongoing Space Ghost series is continuing with artist Jonathan Lau. So issue 12, the second part of our Council of Doom three-parter, comes out April 30th. So that'll be just in time for Free Comic Book Day. But yeah, the Siege of Ghost Planet continues in that one with all of Space Ghost's most dangerous villains all showing up at the same time. And then that actually jumps to Free Comic Book Day, where my new Speed Racer series begins over at Mad Cave. And I'm so excited to be working with artist David Tinto on that one. It's Rocky in a race car. I really was happy with how this Free Comic Book Day issue turned out. It's a self-contained standalone story. It's not a teaser. You get a full satisfying story with this, and it explains kind of what Formula X racing is, what makes it different, and what makes it so important to the residents of Palm City. And then last but not least, I have an all ages graphic novel coming out in October, 10 Ton Titan Terrier from Paper Cuts. Yeah. It's Pokemon novel meets Pacific Rim. A meteor crash lands on Earth. It has a whole host of kaiju eggs and an alien battle suit to boot. The only catch is the only creature on Earth capable of turning on the suit is an 11-inch tall terrier. So it is the story of a boy and his dog if the dog could pilot a 10-ton alien battle suit. So it's super fun with artist Ornella Greco. It's perfect for anybody who likes Pixar movies. That was sort of the age range that I was trying to tailor it to. So kaiju fans, giant robot enthusiasts, and dog lovers of all ages, young or young at heart, can really appreciate this graphic novel coming out October 7th.
Nice. And before we let you go, I did forget to do this earlier, but every week on the show, we have a professional chef down in New Orleans, Brent Macris, who runs an awesome restaurant called Chef, and he either curates or creates a cocktail for us. This week, he created a mocktail based on Captain Planet, the Planet Fizz. It's blueberry juice, orange juice, sparkling water, coconut water, grenadine, orange peel, and mint leaves.
I can't wait to try this.
Yeah, it's got a bunch of leaves in there. It's got heart in it. It's got all the stuff that you'd want.
I love it.
Yeah, there you go. David, thank you so much for coming on. So good seeing you again. The book. I'm very excited to read it. And we'll talk soon.
Thank you guys so much for having me. And have a great night.
Take care. Later, man.
All right, there we go. Again, the book is Captain Planet. It's coming out from Dynamite on April 23rd. So I
can't wait to check that out. Sounds fun.
Check it out. Pete, you are the heart. I just want to say
you've always been. You're the evil more brain. Complicated, darker heart that David was talking about.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I meant the heart attack. All right. We have another...
Too much cream cheese?
From the tap.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Families agents. Life's better when you're under American Families roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
We've got another amazing guest for you this evening. He is one of the guys behind Host Mortem, which is coming to Kickstarter soon. You might know him from Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego, Robot Chicken, and many, many other things, as well as his comic work. Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Chittick, hello.
Hey, hello. Welcome.
You are on mute, probably, or we can't hear you. Oh, no. It was the changed microphone, I bet.
That beautiful microphone. Oh, look at that.
Beautiful microphone. Nope. Can't hear you. Oh, well. All right. Let's take it out. Try again. No, this is good.
Not yet.
Not quite yet.
I wish there was a member of Captain Planet that was sound. Yeah, that would be huge right now.
Oh, boy. All right. Kevin, I recommend logging out real quick and log back in. We'll vamp and for a
try while. Selecting the mic, reselecting the mic and the settings.
Yeah, you know it. You know how it works, Justin.
Yeah, I'm the most audio savvy.
You're a producer, man.
Yes.
Justin almost looks like he got a Captain Planet shirt on.
Oh, yeah.
Look, this is the Duanesburg Skydiving Club where I went skydiving senior week of college.
Oh my God. That sounds terrifying. How was
it? What a time to risk it all. You know what I mean?
It was great. Yeah. Right at the, when you're just getting out of school, I had done a 24-hour beer pong tournament before going skydiving. That's enough.
I've heard enough of this story. Kevin, can we hear you
now?
Hey.
All right. I'd like to make an entrance. Twice as fast.
Yeah. No, that's how you do it.
Crushed it. Thank you so much for coming on. So excited to chat about this project.
Me too, but how ironic that you brought me on after the last guy, because I'm pitching Captain Philadelphia Cream Cheese.
Oh, wow.
Smart.
Who knew? A hero. It would be so topical.
Yeah, wow. The heart in that is little trunks of strawberries. So it's pretty cool.
Oh, boy. Ugh. Yuck. Chives, baby.
So, Kevin, you got this book, Host Mortem, that is coming to Kickstarter soon. You are doing it with Greg Lee. So, as somebody joked in here, I'm missing exactly what they said, but they called it, here we go. Where in the Multiverse is Carmen Sandiego? Because you're both exactly Carmen Sandiego hosts. How did this project come together, I assume? Did you, cross paths backstage?
The funny thing is, Greg and I hosted these shows in the 90s, and we actually never met. Up until 5 years ago at a mutual friend's film festival. And then we exchanged numbers, we hit it off, but then that was it. We never stayed in touch. And I had written this, this pilot, this very noir murder mystery pilot, because I love film noir. I love that time period and stuff. And everybody loved it, but they're like, no one's going to make it because it's period, even though everything I watch is period. And so someone said, why don't you make it a graphic novel? And I thought, I know, but there are noir graphic novels out there. What do I have to offer that only I could do? Like, what's my character? Why is my detective different than any other? And I thought to myself, wait a second. I played myself as a time-traveling detective on Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego. I was like, you're not going to get any more specific than that. And then ironically, Greg Lee hosted Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego as himself, as a classic 1940s gumshoe detective. So I thought, wait a minute. I called Greg out of the blue and I said, Greg, I want to do a graphic novel about two fake detective game show hosts from the 90s who have to solve a series of real murders in the 1940s. And he was like, I'm in. So
wow, nice.
He's really one of my muses. I wrote it, but what's so funny is the fact that I didn't really know Greg. It was kind of just, calling him out of the blue, essentially, is I pitched this series as kind of like the in-laws meets LA Confidential, or The Odd Couple, because Greg and I are very close now, but we're very different. And I didn't really know him very well going into this. And so neither do our characters, who are ourselves, as we attempt to try time travel back to the 40s to solve a murder mystery revolving around the movie The Big Sleep with Humphrey Bogart.
Nice. Fun. Classic.
That's so awesome. Again, only something that I could offer up. I thought this is pretty specific. This is a pretty niche project.
Yeah, it is.
But, Carmen Sandiego does have its fan base still. And Greg has always reached out. I'm reached out to all the time. I was on a Robot Chicken. I turned Mad Magazine into an animated sketch comedy show. I've written Batman, The Flash, Guardians of the Galaxy, Spider-Man. I created the last Spider-Man series on Marvel on Disney Plus. And I thought, in some weird way, this graphic novels bringing together all my interests. It's time travel, it's film noir, it's hosting, it's comic books, it's comedy. And so when I thought, you know what? I think this seems like a good Kickstarter, and that's where we're headed with it.
Nice.
Obviously, you have the comic book background. Did Greg not? Did you have to bring him up to speed? What was that?
I do, in a sense. It's funny because, and I didn't even know this when I first met Greg, is he really, considering he's a pop culture icon, knows very little pop culture. That kind of fueled our relationship, even in the graphic novel, of having to fill him in on things, which works because his show is all about geography, and my show in the 90s was all about history. So in a sense, history is folded into, or pop culture is folded into history. Geography, you know, it's geography. He knows how to get home. No matter where I leave him, he knows how to get home.
When you're putting this together, given that you both have the Carmen San Diego background, and like you're saying, I mean, that's certainly a big selling point of it to fans. How much are you packing with Easter eggs versus pulling back from Easter eggs to let the story show itself?
It is so packed full of Easter eggs, up to the point where I won't be sued. That's how
far. Great line to find.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny because I said the same thing about, you know, I wrote a Star Wars novel a couple of years ago called Star Wars Force Collector. Now, I've worked at Lucasfilm. I've worked literally next to George Lucas creating what was the ill-fated Star Wars Detours animated series that never saw the light of day. But while writing this novel, I had to stop myself and say, who am I writing this for? Because I know Star Wars as best as the next guy. But that doesn't mean you need to sandwich so much of what you know in there. It's also for everybody. You know what I mean? I didn't want to alienate people who didn't know Star Wars. I wanted to be inclusive of people who did it. So it's a nice meld of going back to Star Wars novel. If you're a novice to Star Wars, it's an original character with an original arc that kind of introduces you to the whole Star Wars universe. If you're an expert in Star Wars, it's great because our character touches upon certain objects and he can flash back to those objects past. So we touch upon old comics, old movies, old cartoons, old, you know, whatever's in the Star Wars universe. So it's both. In a sense, Host Mortem is that. At its core, it's a really great murder mystery that's a lot of fun. But if you know Carmen Sandiego, if you know other things that we've done, there's a lot of Easter eggs that will help you along. But it's all icing on the cake. This has to be a solid story just at its core.
Why the big sleep? Why was that the place you had to go?
Again, what's funny is I'm a big fan of the big sleep, big film of film noir, but there were a couple of crossovers. And part of the premise of this is, are hosts smart or do we just have to get it? You know what I mean? Is the question that goes out there. And it's like, I have all these random trivia facts in my head, but do they add up to a hill of beans? Could I solve a murder with them? Because I know that, you know, baked beans were canned in Boston in 18, you know, whatever. It's like, does that come into play?
And you're so, like a reverse Batman. You don't know how to solve a mystery. Exactly. You just have the answers.
It's like the Jeopardy villain. I just have the answers. I don't know how we got there. But one of the facts I knew was two things. The Big Sleep, if you're a film noir buff, you probably know this already. It came out in 1946. But what a lot of people don't know in the general public is it was actually completed in 1945 and released minimally to like some army barracks. And then they realized there was a lot of chemistry between Bogart and Bacall, so they wanted to add some stuff. So they went back and they recut it. In doing that, certain people got recast. So I kept thinking, if there was a murder in this movie, a movie which, by the way, has a character named Carmen. And I was one of the few people who knew that there was an earlier version of this movie. Am I smart or do I just have time on my side to know, like, hey, in 1997, they found the original footage and there's a different person who plays so-and-so, the character who was murdered. Like, wouldn't that be something that only I would know? So it's those little tidbits, and that's one of the reasons that I gravitated towards The Big Sleep.
Not to take a left turn, but you mentioned Star Wars Detours, which for anybody listening who doesn't know, this was a animated,
that's a left turn into a detour.
Yes, animated comedy series about Star Wars that I think produced 40 episodes, if I remember correctly.
Two seasons we produced, and then George sold the company. And then Kathleen was like, I don't want to do this.
I was at WonderCon a couple of weeks back and talked to Brendan Hay about this. It was like, do you still, who was the showrunner of the thing, do you still want it to come out? And he was kind of like, he obviously still was bummed that it didn't actually come out, but felt that animation has moved on. It's okay. They would have to redo the whole thing anyway. Do you feel the same way, or is there a part of you?
I think Star Wars Detours lives best in the what if category than it would if it ever came saw the light of day. It's a great show, but it had its time. And, you know, I look at it, my journey was not to see this see the light of day. My journey was to sit next to George Lucas and pitch Story and have him laugh, you know, and I was like, all right, you're not gonna end the series. All right, you know
that was like, fun.
I'll take my ball and go home.
And not to call you out, but Justin at the same time was working on a craft show that had Star Wars craft show that had the same thing happen.
I hosted a 50 episode series where we did DIY like Star Wars crafts for Lucasfilm. And that got axed at the same time I think they were talking about here. We made 50 of them, though. It was called Do or Do Not It Yourself was the title.
I love that. I wish that did air the light of day.
It was crazy. It was a year of me being in a hot studio building resin benches of the Battle of Yavin. It was crazy.
I mean, Brandon moved to San Francisco. He was there for years. You know what I mean? So my heart goes out to him. But we did all have a great time. So, you know, there's just so much sympathy we can have for any of us.
We got a question here in from YouTube. Schoikler wants to know, of the two Carbon PBS shows, which had the cooler villains?
Is that for me? Because my answer is going to be my show.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely.
I mean, you know, Jekyll and Hyde, Dr. Beljar. Come on, these were the great thing about, or at least what I enjoyed about my show, was it was not just animated, it was live action. So, Janine LaManna was the very first Carmen Sandiego in live action. And she was our very first, our first series was her first time as Carmen. That was the first time that Carmen was in live action. The same with the villains. And where in the world, they were all animated. But now we had actors come in and put on costumes and play all sorts of parts. And that was half the fun of the show. That show for me was like, you know, Jeopardy meets like MSK 3000. You know what I mean? Put together with gum and glue, and we were beaming people on board and doing sketches, and we had the great Lynn Thigpen, who is, you know, the head of it all. So we were in good hands.
Do you think, I think I kind of know the answer here, but is there any world where a show like that could exist in the modern day? Because I feel like it's so fantastic and so many people love it still to this day.
Definitely.
But
I'll never forget.
I think it does. Because my daughter is 14, and when she was younger, we would watch them on YouTube, and I have them all on, you know, now they're digitized. But the funny thing is, because it was a history show, it's not dated. What is dated were the rewards. We got you a giant multimedia system, which, you know, takes up my entire living room, which
now I have all right here. You know what I mean? It was kind of like, what were we giving away?
But the questions and the characters still held up.
Hmm. I mean, not to keep taking a walk through memory lane, but you also, as you mentioned, worked on the Mad animated series. What do you think the place is for the Mad brand nowadays?
You know, it's so funny because the world is so crazy. It's kind of like, does The Daily Show have any joy anymore in what they do? Because it's all like shooting fish in a barrel. You know what I mean? But on my Instagram, I still do like a news anchor, very Mad-like. And I did it as a challenge to myself to be like, hey, can I come up with three topical news announcers like every three a week? And it's been such a joy because, you know, we live in a day and age now where in this business, very few things see the light of day. Cut to our shows, Justin. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but of course.
In being able to just put something out on social media that I've done, it kind of gratifies me in many ways. So I totally think there is a world for Mad to return, or a show like Mad. If I'm being honest, the only reason I think it stopped was most shows of that genre are tied to a toy line, and we did not have one. And you know, Alfred E. Newman, Spy vs. Spy, Don Martin, they were all licensed years ago, so they couldn't really do new ones. And basically, they were like, "Well, that's our lifeline." So that's
why. Yeah.
But I think it can go on and on. It's like SNL in a sense, you know, but animated, so it's even, you know, even more timely.
To get back to host Mortem, though, like you've been mentioning, you've worked in a bunch of different formats. You've done monthly comics, you've done novels, you've hosted TV shows. But what was a different challenge about this, other than obviously pseudo-writing yourself in there?
Right. Well, that's so funny because it's not even pseudo-writing myself. It was that. But what was great in the positive I mean, there was no negative, but what was interesting was if you tune into either Carmen Sandiego show, Greg and I have a persona. It was on PBS. It's a kids show, you know, but that audience is older now, and so are we. And I wanted this to be a legitimate murder mystery. So I'm not holding back. It's not kid friendly. It's an adult graphic novel with murder and all sorts of things like that. Murder, sex, everything you get in film noir. And yeah. I think that was kind of fun to be able to show our more realistic sides. You know, we could drop the facade of having to be, you know, PBS friendly and do that. On the flip side, you know, there's no one holding the reins but me. So the buck stops here. You know what I mean? So if you like it, it's me. And if you don't like it, you're also looking at me. I will say I have got an incredible creative team. I found this a couple of amazing artists. Damian Torres is my main artist. And I had a very specific look I was going for. I wanted to be film noir. I wanted to be graphic novel friendly. And when I came across him, I was like, oh, my God. And, of course, it was no surprise that he loves film noir. So that was a really great melding. And then, of course, I have Pippa Boland doing my coloring, and I've got Taylor Esposito doing my lettering. But then it dawned on me, this is like a 200-page graphic novel broken up into four issues. And very much like a film noir, I wanted each issue to have a different narrator. And so it dawned on me that I was like, oh, you know, maybe there should be a slightly different style for each. So then, like, my fast-talking receptionist from issue two from the 1940s, I thought, wouldn't it be great if we had, like, a Golden Age comic look to this issue? So that's where I came across a great artist named Andrea Schiavone, who's from Italy, and I loved his look. So he's coming on board for that issue. And there's a lot packed into these four issues, into this one graphic novel.
Wow, cool. What about the Kickstarter itself? That hasn't launched yet, so I don't know how much you can talk about, but what could we potentially expect from it other than
the
issues?
I can talk about it. It's, you know, what I'm so excited about is it's launching in early May, and you can go to Kickstarter and follow us now, or just go to hostmortem.com. I have it linked to the Kickstarter page. Because there's a couple things you want to sign up for. One is for the early announcements and kind of the early bird specials. I've got a celebrity comic book artist who is going to be announced soon that did a cover for me, which was great. I also have some artists. Tony Fodi is a wonderful artist who did my Star Wars Force Collector cover. So when I came up with this idea, he was the first one I reached out to and was like, you've got to recapture some of this magic, and he did. Jesse Larson has a great Edward Gorey style to him, and so he did a cover, and Timothy Anderson, and even Damian did his own cover. So when I was looking at Kickstarter, I go to Kickstarter, and just as much as in this day and age, you go to comic book shops on Wednesdays, I find a lot of people just tune into Kickstarter on Monday or Tuesdays, and that's a lot what I do. So finding my comics there, I knew what I look for, and I also thought, kind of like the book itself, what can I offer that only I could offer, that someone backing would be like, oh, that'd be interesting. So since it is a collaborative thing over Kickstarter, I was like, let me offer some stuff. You've got the typical stuff, like be drawn into the graphic novel, be murdered off in the graphic novel, you know, have your name dropped or whatever. But I'm also offering things like, I do a lot of voiceover in life. You know, I did a lot of Mad, a lot of Robot Chicken. I'm Bruce Banner across Marvel's animated universe. Let me do voiceover for your project if you want. You know, there's a backing awesome. Tier where you can do that. There's a tier where Damian and I critique. If you have a comic you're looking to get some feedback on, we'll do that. I've, you know, written movies and TV and comics and novels. I will give you some advice. There's dinners awesome. With Greg and I. You know, come and meet us in person. We've got videos, we've got Zooms, and we've got in-person dinners, you know, and you can come to the launch party. There's all sorts of things that I thought, like, in the nooks and crannies of it all, I thought, what would I want if I were backing this
book? Yeah, that's awesome.
I tried to go down the list.
Yeah. And I don't know where this question got to, but is Rockapella going to be involved at all?
I will say there's a lot of opportunity in this book on purpose for visuals and for run-ins and for flashbacks and all sorts of stuff. So I will say, cool. I'm sure if you tune in, you'll see a lot of faces that you recognize.
Wow.
How's that?
Awesome. Love it. Other than Host Mortem, is there anything else you want to plug, Kevin? Anything else folks should be checking out?
Well, you know what's funny is I say follow me at Kevin Shinnick across social media because I am doing all those different things. But I was saying earlier to someone, it's as if I shook the host tree at the beginning of this year. And I thought, let's do Host Mortem. I hadn't hosted in a while. I called my agent and I was like, should I get back into hosting? And they were like, oh, maybe. I don't know if anybody's looking for you. then I got an audition and I couldn't believe it was the ultimate host job. I am now playing Dick Clark in the new Michael Jackson movie.
Wow. That's awesome.
I felt like I shook the host tree and Dick Clark fell out.
Wow. That's so cool. When is that happening?
It was supposed to come out in October, but now I've read that they are thinking of splitting the movie into two movies.
Two.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Oh, yes. Wow.
I was just reading about that because it's, it's been pushed because you shot it already.
First
obviously.
It was April. Yeah, we shot it last year. Then it was going to air in April. And then I thought a premiere in April. And then I think they realized, oh, that's not great for award season. So they pushed it October, and now they're looking to maybe break into two movies.
Well, maybe they'll have you back for some more scenes if they're doubling the length of the movie.
Double the movie. That happened to Dick Clark.
Yeah, exactly.
Now,
but again, just lastly, it's like, you know, at Hostmortem. I mean, not at Hostmortem. Hostmortem.com you can go to. Sign up there because the more followers we get, the better chance we have for success and the more news you get about it. And like I said, we've got a few more surprises before we launch in May that I think you'd be happy to hear about.
You have a very interesting wall behind you. Is there anything you want to point out or kind of share with us?
Sure. Yeah. Well, every time I do a comic, I try and buy a page from the artist. This is Rafa Garis did my first Batman comic. Aaron Cooter did my first Spider-Man with Spider-Man vs. Deadpool. Yeah. And Mad Magazine, I had my whole crew immortalized in the Mort Drucker look. But you know what's so funny, just real quick, and this goes back to the Kickstarter too, is like, I do these now, but now they're kind of a rarity because most artists work off tablets. So unless you're getting a commission at a comic book festival or a Comic-Con, you're not very rarely we get an actual page from a book. You know what I mean? Because unless you save them, and I said to Damien, like, let's put some cool pages aside because you don't see that anymore. So we've got some pages we're going to, backers can get those pages and stuff. So it's a lot of fun.
Cool. That's great. Cool. Yeah, I have a whole pile of iPads over here that I bought from my house.
You got to charge those, Alex. You got to charge them.
I know.
Exactly.
Kevin, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks,
very
Kevin.
Excited to read the book. It sounds awesome. Yeah, I'm very excited to check out Michael Jackson and Michael Jackson for Good when it comes out next year. That was a wicked joke.
It's really good.
Right. Thanks, Kevin. Bye.
Later, Kevin. Bye. Nice of all the sequels you could choose, you choose Wicked.
It's top of mind, man.
Oh my god!
It's big movie, okay? It's a big franchise.
So well,
ruined it there, right there. You can check out Hostmortem, as he mentioned, at hostmortem.com. It's going to be a Kickstarter in May, as he mentioned, and it sounds awesome. What?
It does sound awesome. I can't wait.
It's great. Yeah, really fun. Dick
all
Clark.
All right.
Perfect. Yeah, that's
perfect. That's great. Why don't we move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments over on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch, maybe Instagram. I'll take a little looky-loo over there.
But
while they're getting those questions in, what are you guys drinking?
Justin, you have a mocktail in the beginning there? What was that?
It was a mocktail plus alcohol, a.k.a. a cocktail. Tequila and Aperol, one of my faves, a little grapefruit bitters, keeping it bitter. Then I've switched over to a Springbok. Tis the season.
Wow. Yeah. I'm back to drinking garage beer, even though I don't have a garage.
Yeah. Nice. I stopped by and I really confirmed that you don't have a garage today at your house.
Well, I have a carport, but,
I have a carport, but no garage.
Yeah.
What's the difference between a carport and a garage?
No walls.
That's right.
No walls?
Just a roof.
It's a little roof, so you don't have to shovel out your car.
What does it hang on, though? Is it just hovering there?
It's just a
floating car umbrella.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But you have a driveway. So you have like a tent on your driveway. Is that what's going on?
Yeah.
I legitimately have no idea.
To call it a carport is a funny word because it's not, it sounds like an airport, which is not what it is. It's not like there's a Cinnabon in one corner of your carport.
Oh, man, it'd be great.
Yeah, that's your dream.
I actually am taking care of a friend's car over spring break because they're out of town, and Whoa. It is the most stressful thing, and I hate it so much. I
oh
do
my
not know
God! You know, how are you a New Yorker? You've solidified.
Why
you've solidified
would you
into
ever
a
need a car around here. You don't need a car in New York City.
I drive in my car so much.
It does really great. Shouldn't. It's crazy though.
I had to move it. You can't just
because
yeah,
of the street
yeah,
sweepers
yeah,
today.
Yeah.
I was driving around for like
looking for a
minutes.
Spot. Oh, it's a nightmare. It's
you double
a nightmare.
Park across the street. You double park across the street.
No, I couldn't. Yeah. Couldn't because
Your
every spot was taken. It's crazy.
Wow.
Anyway, woof. Well, that's all your audience that. Questions. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Schreckler says, what are some of your favorite kid shows that came out after you became an adult? I don't know. We've been doing the show so long. All of them, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I watch a ton of kid shows with my kids. They're watching Gravity Falls in there now because I turn them on to
nice.
It.
Nice. Yeah, it's a great show.
I mean, Bluey is the GOAT, if you want to cry at points in watching it.
Is that what you're what looking else? For in the show? You're like, man, I want to use something.
If a show's good enough to make me cry, hell yeah. Well, we watched Hook the other night. Mm-hmm. Great movie. We also watched Saving Mr. Banks. That movie's so good. And that's not really a kid's movie.
I've never seen that movie.
Oh, watch that movie. Very good film.
All right.
Mary Poppins, but a good history.
To answer the question, I'll throw out She-Ra and the Princesses of Power. That's pretty great. And my son and I have really been enjoying watching My Adventures with Superman. It's really good as well. And also, like I mentioned, every other thing I watch is a cartoon. So there you go.
Hilda on Netflix is good.
That is a good
yes, one. We watch Hilda in my house as well.
Stray Bullet says, are you guys smoking pork belly, chicken, and peppers while watching the live show and doing your taxes, or is it just me?
Wow, doing the taxes under the gun, my guy.
Oh, guy. Man, that like sounds like a glorious day. Look at that. Man, chicken and peppers? Come on, man.
Pete, you can do that. That's the easiest thing.
I don't know.
You just
man.
Get a slice of it. It's crazy. Smoking pork belly, that's hard. And yeah. that's
well, his
tasty.
Arms are already full of loose chicken. He can't possibly pick up the peppers as well at the supermarket.
Yeah. He loves loose, unwrapped chicken.
Speaking of loose things, Justin, did you want to check your pockets again and empty them out onto a table or something?
Yeah, you got any more change in there?
Yeah,
you
wow. throw so, some mad. Stuff around? So mad.
We
should shout out.
Pete respects the audio of this show, not
like
you.
That's right.
Yeah, that's cool. Definitely. That's what I was. That was disrespect, is what I was doing. shout out to all the audience members that solved our mystery of the day. Kevin's mic was his phone, and he didn't realize it.
Oh, well. Hartford 1988 on Twitch says, now that The Last of Us premiered this past Sunday, will Alex play The Last of Us Part 2? Did you end up playing The Last of Us Part 1? I did, but only a little bit because I was playing with my daughter, and we haven't had time to get past, like, I don't know, probably the first couple of hours of the game. So I still have to finish Part 1. But the game, even that little bit, was so much better than the show. So much better.
And really?
Yes. Everything in the show that I was like, huh, this is an interesting shooting choice that you're doing that feels like a video game, makes sense when you're playing a video game and actually using a controller to control the movements. It's really good.
Wait, so you're saying it's more fun because you're playing it, or it's actually
it's
a better
made product?
It's not more
fun. Product. It's like... Here, my issue with the show, at least season one, forgetting about season two because we're like one episode in, but my issue with season one was it often felt like, oh, okay, I feel like this is the sort of thing where I should be feeling something, but you're moving the camera in a way where it's like this is a video game cutscene, and I'm not involved because I'm not the person playing this game. So it felt like I was one step removed from the show. Mm. When you're in the video game, that's exactly what's happening, is you're controlling the characters.
In the video game?
Yes, cool. Tron style.
Alex, have you ever seen a video game?
So you're upset because you didn't play the game while you're watching the show? Is that the critique that you're saying? That you,
nope, that is 100% not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is you understand how video games and TV are inherently two different mediums, right?
So far, I'm with you.
Yes. Okay. So one of the things that works about video games is you are in the place of the character. Whether you actually are playing it first person or third person or whatever, you are emotionally involved in that thing as it's happening. TV plays on those feelings that you have in a different way than the way video games do. I felt like watching the first season of The Last of Us, they were trying to play on your feelings in the way that you would get from a video game, but without the controller that actually involves you in that thing. I'll give you a specific example. There's a scene in the first episode of The Last of Us where they're in a truck and the camera keeps turning and you're looking and you're seeing the slow destruction of the world as they're driving. And it's scary and it's well done. It's a well-shot scene. But the entire time I was like, this is fixed perspective is so weird. This had to be his thing in the game. And in fact, when you play the game, you're in the truck, same thing, but you control the way you're looking. So you can hear things like over your shoulder and you look and it feels like you are in that place there as
so
it's
if
happening.
You were...
It makes it more immediate. It makes the feelings more immediate.
So if you were watching it at home and were able to control the camera movements, you would feel more connected.
Here's the thing, though, Alex. I think yes.
I'm just saying, Craig Mazin is a hack, and I wish I had directed The Last of Us. That's what I'm trying to get at.
There it is, folks.
But I think it is actually a directing choice. I don't think it's a medium choice, because you could shoot that scene and make it. You could follow the sound and whip faster with the camera and stuff to give you that more visceral feeling. But I think TV, especially prestige TV, wants to be a little bit more snobby about it. So I think that's maybe the choice
here. Well, but then there are other things that took me out of it as well. Like there's the scene where Anna Torv's character, I'm blanking on the name of, and Joel and Ellie are sneaking out of the compound and they're going through those pipes. And the entire time they're like, come on, over here. Follow me. And it's like, this is video game dialogue. You don't need to do it this way in the show at all. But then again, yes, that's exactly what it is in the game when you're sneaking out and there are people scanning for you with their flashlights and it's that very typical level. And it's like, you don't need to translate it that accurately to screen. Figure out the way that it is TV, not video games.
I think the real thing is you, Alex, need to escape from an apocalypse on a truck and through a pipe and stuff. In your 100%. Life. 100%. That's the thing you're chasing.
It's more emotional. The game, even the little bit that I played, is better than the TV show. That's all I'm saying.
Wow, slam.
Nat Towson says, what are some comics that do a good job of addressing not fun issues like the climate crisis?
Captain Planet coming out April 23rd.
I didn't bring this up because I didn't want to draw an immediate comparison or like put David on the spot, but Absolute Superman is doing that very well right now.
That's a good call. Yes. Like labor issues, workers' rights, billionaire class, a lot of that stuff.
The climate crisis destroys Krypton. So it's very directly what that book is addressing, I think.
A lot of Mark Russell's work addresses not fun issues in a funny way while still letting the issues have bite, I think, which is sort of what you want. Hmm. Derek Mainhart in the comments hits Assorted Crisis Events, the first issue. Definitely that hits on even beyond the text of any of these issues, hits the psychological factor of it and the way it feels to be living in a world that is going through all these issues at the same time. So I would plus up that big time.
You know, it's answers like that you can tell why he's the main heart. You know what I mean? Like, he just nailed it there.
He's the main, like, Mati better watch out because
heart
is coming for him.
Mati better he's watch our his. Main heart.
Watch your back.
Michael Tillman says, the next CBC draft still in the queue? Sure is. Pete sent us a text about it yesterday.
I'm ready, man. I got my draft lined up and ready.
Yeah, you will hear a draft in what, the next 2 weeks? We haven't taped it yet, but it's coming very soon. It has to come soon.
Yes, it does. Joy Groa says, what will Bullseye throw in the Daredevil finale tomorrow? What are some of your favorite comic booky moments in TV and movie adaptations? First of all, Joey, in an hour, it's going to be on TV in an hour, the Daredevil finale.
What are we doing?
Tomorrow, it's tonight, man.
Stop this and go watch. Get ready.
What do you think? What will Bullseye throw at Daredevil?
His own heart. Yeah, I hope.
I think he'll throw a shoe, and they'll do like the Austin Powers "Who throws a shoe?" moment.
Maybe it'll be a callback to, you know, he'll unwrap a paperclip and do that move, or you know, be on an airplane, use a peanut.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Here's what we don't think about, though. What if he?
Yes. When he said unwrap paperclip, I was like, do you think paperclips kind of like little individual
It says used by April 19th because they go bad, paperclips.
Yeah, totally. Got to have them fresh.
Oh, I love a fresh clip. The smell of a open up a fresh paperclip.
Oh, dude.
It smells like business. I was going to say, we don't ever think about it a lot, but why doesn't he throw Daredevil?
Yeah.
The ultimate bullseye. What are some of your favorite comic booky moments in TV and movie
basketball
adaptations?
Special.
Have they actually done that in a movie? They have, right? Which one? Pete?
What?
Pete playing dumb so hard.
Were you saying fastball special and we were talking about or last. Were you just saying fastball special?
We were talking about, you know, like who Daredevil should throw, and he said you should throw Daredevil. I was like, oh, it'd be like a fastball special. Daredevil.
That makes sense.
So you were not answering the same.
I was still on the last question. And
you said it so much later. You said it like after Alex asked a whole other question.
Think about it. You know, it takes a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's like if right now I said, Springbok.
It's not that delayed, but all right.
I brought this up a bunch, and I know you guys make fun of me every time, but
why do it then?
Otherwise bad movie at the end of Green Lantern when he creates...
Oh, come on.
No,
dude.
When he takes
it's a shitty movie.
It's a shitty movie, but
stop bringing up a shitty
him
movie.
Creating a big boxing glove with the Green Lantern energy and punching Parallax into the sun. That's a very comic booky moment. I enjoyed that.
And it redeemed the movie. It's one of your favorites.
Nope. Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
It's very funny
movies.
That, Pete, it bothers you to be reminded of things that were bad.
It's true.
But why? How do you forget about them throughout the rest of the day?
Yeah, well, it's just, it's like, hey, remember this thing that they really fucked up? And it's like, oh, man, it would have been nice if we got a good Green Lantern movie, but the... They didn't even watch it. The fucking post team did
but
such a shitty job.
But you don't like Green Lantern.
Yeah, you hate Green Lantern.
Yeah, but it'd been nice to get a good movie.
So you could have been like, "Well, I don't like Green Lantern, and I don't like this, but it was
it's good.
But I'm glad you did."
I don't know.
Oh, I mean, here's the most sideways answer I'll ever give. In the Zack Snyderverse, it's very lame when they. When Superman and Batman realized that both their mothers are named Martha.
Oh, my God, yes.
But I had never thought, I had never put that together that both of their moms were named Martha. And I was like, holy shit, I've read these comics for 20 years, and I never thought that? It's crazy.
Yeah.
We never talked about it.
No.
That's true.
I thought about it. We should have. But I never said it out loud.
Really? What were you holding on to that? Keeping one bullet in the chamber?
Yeah, just
kind of
in
thing?
Case. Just in case. And then I saw that movie. I was like, God damn it. I wasted my life. speaking
I,
of.
I like
wait...
Schuechler turning into me right there. That was fun.
Mm. Yeah.
Yelling.
Great. I don't remember the real smooth transition I was going to say. So, trivia.
Hey, uh-oh. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online, because if you had $25, you want to get some comics, right? So all we need is a first hand up, a pick me. Hey, Michael Tillman volunteered.
Hey, there we go, Michael Tillman.
All
right. Okay, here we go. Today's trivia is about Godzilla and comics, and a small nod to the legend, Angie Stone, R.I.P.
Who was
an amazing singer.
Killed by Godzilla, I believe, correct?
Yeah, famously.
Well, those two really don't interlock too much, so
I don't
even
think
you
they
would,
but all right.
It just seems, why would you do that? Please listen.
Why would I try to connect two thoughts?
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, all thoughts should be kept separately in little, tiny paperclip packages that you open one at a time. Yeah. And be like, whoosh,
fresh.
Here's a thought. Keep that thought
fresh. Fresh thought, dude.
You got to open a six-pack of thoughts at the same time. They'll go bad.
Oh, all look right. at this. This is a thought from several years ago. Here we go.
Wait, before you do it, Pete, Straight Bullet says, why Godzilla? Just wondering.
Well, if you stay tuned to the stack, you know, maybe there'll be some fun Godzilla stuff in there. Also, Godzilla is having a moment. You know what I mean?
Yes.
A lot of comics about Godzilla of late.
Godzilla's a busy little slut lately, isn't he?
How dare you?
That's the title. That's the title of the comic.
Godzilla's sexual behaviors are none of your business.
No, complimentary. Complimentary, man.
Godzilla, big, busy slut. That's what they say.
Oh, man. All right. So, Mikey Tillman, please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. When was Godzilla's first appearance in comics in Japan? Was it A, 1954? B, yes, of course, Drew is going to be there, but who else is going to be there? Or C, Drew Goen?
Mm. Very nice. Why is Godzilla having a moment?
I don't know. It's very weird. I think it's A.
A is correct. Well done. All right, here we go. Question number two. When was Godzilla officially in a comic in the States? Was it A, 1976? Ooh, that's a good year. B, oh, let me guess, you like the band but hate the name? C, Chelsea O'Toole.
What?
What? Wait, which band?
I don't Tool. Get that one.
Oh, Tool.
Nice.
See? There we go.
76?
Yes, correct. Great year, that 76. A lot of good things happened. Unofficially, Godzilla made a cameo in Archie Comics in what year? Was it A, 1965? B, who do you like better, L.L. Bean or L.L. Cool J? C, Lauren L. Baker.
Tenuous. I can tell that you only have one thought at a time when you make these.
Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate that.
Great. Derek, while we're waiting, brings up the Matthew Broderick Godzilla, which has one of the best ending lines of all times, which is, I don't know, just some French guy.
Tillman,
French right? guy.
Tillman answered both parts of the question. Says likes LL Cool J better. And A is correct. $25 yours.
Woo!
Nice.
Congratulations,
wow.
Michael. Shoot us an email and we will get that off to you. Pete, what is the secret movie you are referencing?
I'm talking about the 2014 comedy Ride Along, of course.
Of course. Yeah. Now, why don't you ride along to our...
Wait, before you jump off, Michael Tillman has a comment on his recent win.
Can I donate my winnings to Unite Against Book Bans? It's ALA's effort to fight censorship. Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
Yes, I will look up the link now and drop that in the chat. In the meantime, wow, Justin took off his hat. Surprising. Pete,
oh, you're dyeing your hair now, Justin?
Hot in here.
You got some highlights? Did you get some highlights coming out?
No.
Okay.
This is what my hair always looks like.
I don't know. I've never seen it like that color before. All right. I'm looking forward to Batman Superman World's Finest. I'm hoping for some amazing action, some amazing art. Very excited about this issue. Wonder Woman number 20. It's been absolutely glorious. I can't wait to read the next one. Daredevil Unleash Hell, Red Band number 4. And, of course, Godzilla versus Hulk number 1. I mean... I was emotionally divided. I didn't know who to vote for, but the book will take care of you, so don't you worry about it.
Great.
We're hoping.
Yeah. Justin, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
Don't tell me. Some more salon time? Maybe, you know, do some nails to kind of match the new do and stuff?
I don't know what you're talking about. I did get a haircut. I did not dye
looks
my
great.
Hair.
It looks
if I was dyeing my hair, I would take out all of the grays rather than...
Oh, really? It just seems like you wanted to... You know, new kids that are on the block on the top of your head. You know what I mean?
That's exactly what I asked for.
Yeah.
My barber was like,
give me the right stuff.
Yeah. Wow. Alex, hot on the refs tonight. I got to shout out Summer of Superman Special number 1. Dan Slott's writing on this book. His first work for DC in a hot minute. And man, I bet he's going to slot into writing Superman well.
Oh, jeez.
And two others I'm curious about. Pete already said Wonder Woman. This is the kickoff of a new arc that is very intriguing to me. The cover is Wonder Woman and Batman. It's a murder mystery of some sort, mm-hmm. and I am hyped on it. So very excited for that. And the other one I'll say, Absolute Flash number 2. I feel like I was a little harsh on the first one.
Yeah, you were.
Saying that it felt like it wasn't part of the absolute line. I'm curious if where it goes from here.
Cool. Sorry if I'm repeating any, but Pete, I missed the ones that you shouted out because I was looking for the link to drop in the chat for anybody listening. By the way, it's ec.ala.org/donation if you want to support the fight against book bans, which I'm sure you do. But Cable Love and Chrome, I'll give a shout out to number four from Marvel from our guest David Propose. Very excited about that. Given
we just had him on the show.
We did. We should have talked to him about it.
Yeah, we should have.
I am also looking forward to Exceptional X-Men number 8. I know.
That's your book.
That is my book. And speaking of my books, I'm loving this lore war stuff. And Star Trek Defiant number 26 is coming out tomorrow. So excited to check that out as well. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank David Propose for coming on to talk about Captain Planet. That is coming out April 23rd from Dynamite. Also, Kevin Shinnick for talking about Host Mortem. You can sign up on Kickstarter now at hostmortem.com to let known when the Kickstarter pops up. Next week on the show, Anthony Cleveland is going to be here to talk about Buried Long, Long Ago. Dwayne Murray will be here to talk about Better Place. You can listen to Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast, Monday through Friday. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, talking about Daredevil Born Again.
Wrapping up soon
now. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Support the show and all the shows we do. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. And occasionally they let that special guest speak. So grab your grin.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.